This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Sherlock Holmes and the adventure of the empty house, his story from April 11th, 1948. That's followed by In the Name of the Law and their story from August 8th, 1936, titled She Was Murdered.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 1036 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Tonight's story, The Adventure of the Empty House. Well, here we are, as usual, in Dr. Watson's hospitable study, all ready and waiting for our weekly treat. What's it to be tonight, Dr. Watson?
Well, tonight, I think I'll tell you how Holmes made an unexpected and, I may say, dramatic return after many years' absence. Yes, it was so dramatic, I came dashed close to fainting.
Well, well.
But before we go into that, suppose you tell us about a happy surprise that's in store for the chaps who buy their first Clippercroft clothes. Surprise that won't shock their pocketbooks.
How right you are, Dr. Watson. New spring Clippercraft clothes are arriving constantly at fine stores everywhere. That's an important announcement for men who have always worn Clippercraft, and for those who will wear them for the first time this spring, because Clippercraft values are even more sensational today than ever before. And that's saying plenty. The Clippercraft plan concentrates the buying power of 1036 of the nation's finest stores from coast to coast, making possible steady year-round operation, resulting in tremendous savings in manufacturing and distribution costs, and putting those savings, even in the face of today's high prices, where they belong, in your pocket. And don't forget that your Clippercraft dealer is a friendly local independent store, a store you can trust. Handsome new Clippercraft suits are only $40 and $45. Top coats in fine coverts and worsted gabardine are only $40 and $45. Sport jackets, but $26.50. And superb tropicals, but $33.75 to $40. Compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now, Dr. Watson, to get back to Mr. Holmes' dramatic reappearance.
Right. You know, I've always said it's a good thing to absent yourself from time to time. Makes people appreciate you when you come back. That's what Holmes said the time he was missing for 3 years.
3 years? Whew, that's a pretty long lapse of time.
Yes, it was, rather. Everyone thought he was dead. What a horrible time that was. I couldn't bear to live in our old lodgings in Baker Street. Associations and everything.
Yes.
It's funny how sentimental we all are underneath. I'd taken up my quarters in a more fashionable part of town and resumed my medical practice. It was after Holmes had succeeded in driving Professor Moriarty out of England. We all believed Holmes had sacrificed his life to rid society of that evil spirit.
That sounds terrifically exciting, Doctor. Won't you tell us how Holmes managed to put a finish to Moriarty?
What? Kill off Professor Moriarty before I've told you the rest of our adventures with him? Well, I should say not. Never catch me throwing away good material, but let's get down to cases.
Fair enough.
Very well. It was in the spring of the year 1894 when all of London, the fashionable world in particular, was dismayed by the death under most unusual circumstances of the Honorable Ronald Adair. That likable young gentleman was the second son of the Earl of Maynooth. He lived, together with his mother, the Countess of Maynooth, and his sister Hilda, at 427 Park Lane. The youth moved in the best society, but was very fond of cards, played continually.
Aha, uh-huh. Piling up gambling debts he couldn't pay.
Well, as a matter of fact, it came out in evidence that he had actually won as much as £420 in one sitting at his club the week previous, from Godfrey Miller and Lord Balmoral, I believe it was. His partner was a certain Colonel Moran.
But then he must have been well ahead of the game.
Oh, quite. And yet it was to this easygoing, likable, I might even say lucky young aristocrat, that death came in a most strange and unexpected form on the night of the March the 30th. He returned from his club shortly after 10, his mother and sister having gone to the opera. The butler, Peter, swore that he heard him enter the front room on the second floor, generally used as his sitting room. The night being chilly, he had lit a fire, and as it showed a tendency to smoke, one of the front windows had been opened about 4 inches. Nothing further was heard from this sitting room until 11:30, the hour of the return of Lady Maynooth and her daughter. Peters testified that her ladyship seemed rather agitated.
Gracious, Hilda. I declare I'm chilled to the bone.
I'm sorry, Mama.
Oh, Peters, will you help me with my carriage boots?
Certainly, milady. You've returned so early. I trust the opera was not a disappointment.
Oh, no, indeed, Peters. It was heavenly. Only Mama can never bear to stay for the death scenes at the end.
So depressing, I always think.
Why, Mama, I've always thought Carmen was terribly gay. Just because he knifes her in the last scene doesn't
mean... No, I know. But so primitive, so brutal. And that bit in the gypsy camp, where Carmen keeps turning up the ace of spades, the card of death. I had the queerest foreboding during that scene, as though Ronnie needed me. Oh, dear, I do wish he wouldn't play whist so often. I'm sure it's not good for him. A boy his age should have other interests. I wish I could get that ace of spades out of my mind. I can't help feeling it means something.
Oh, nonsense, Mama. You've just given yourself another case of the fidgets. The English climate that's depressing you, that's all. One day of sunshine and you'll be as gay as a lark.
I'm sure I hope so. Oh, dear, listen to that wind. Fog and rain, rain and fog. Peters, has Mr. Ronald come in yet?
Yes, milady, over an hour ago. He's upstairs in his sitting room.
Well, thank heaven for that. I think I'll just go up and say goodnight to him.
That's right, Mama. Make sure he isn't sitting in a draught.
Hilda, really? I declare I don't know what children are coming to nowadays. No respect for their parents.
Good night, darling.
And you're not to sit up till all hours, mind.
No, Mama.
Really, I don't know how young girls nowadays expect to keep their looks if they never go to bed. Oh, dear, that wind, it's so eerie. Ronnie? Ronnie, dear, it's Mother. Why, it's locked. The door's locked. Ronnie! Are you all right? Ronnie!
Mother, what's the matter?
Ronnie, he's locked himself in. He doesn't answer. Peters! Hilda! Oh, come quickly, I'm afraid.
Mother.
Oh, Ronnie! Ronnie! Why don't you answer?
No, don't worry, my lady.
It's all right, Mother. He's probably fallen asleep.
Ronnie! Oh, Hilda, I'm frightened. Peters, can't you break the door down?
I can try, my lady.
Here, let me help. Now then, both together.
There he is, milady. Fallen asleep at the desk.
But he looks so strange. Cards scattered everywhere, and look there. The ace of spades. There's blood on it. Blood dripping onto the carpet. Ronnie!
Oh. Well, Peters, quick, help me. She's fainted.
Oh, dear.
Here, put her on the couch.
No. Poor Lady Maynooth.
Oh, dear, Mother.
Shall I call the doctor, miss?
Oh, never mind, Mother. It's Ronnie we have to worry about. Maybe it's not too late. Oh, Ronnie. Oh, his head. How horrible.
Shot with a soft bullet. Better not look, miss. It's not nice.
Oh, Ronnie, darling, why did you do it?
He didn't, miss.
Oh, but Peters, he must have. The door was locked on the inside.
It's not suicide, Miss Hilda. It's murder. Mr. Ronnie couldn't have done it. There's no weapon anywhere in the room.
But look here, Dr. Watson. Ronald Adair was in the second-story sitting room with the door locked on the inside.
Exactly, Mr. Harris. Furthermore, he was in the room alone.
Yes, but if someone else shot him, how is that possible?
That's what puzzled the authorities. No one could have climbed up to the open window without leaving traces of some sort. The outside wall was perfectly smooth, no ivy, no water pipes. Furthermore, there was a drop of over 20 feet from the window to the ground.
Well, then the murderer couldn't have been in the room with young Adair. He must have shot at him from the street below.
Remember, the window was open only 4 inches and the glass was not shattered.
That would be a pretty remarkable shot, Doctor.
Furthermore, Park Lane is not an unfrequented thoroughfare, and there is a cab stand within 50 yards of the house, and yet no one heard a shot.
Nice little problem.
Yes, exactly. Scotland Yard was at its wit's end. Our old friend, Inspector Lestrade, even went so far as to consult me in the matter, knowing how familiar I was with Holmes' methods of deduction. And so I promised to have a look at the facade of Lady Maynooth's house in Park Lane to see if anything suggested itself to me.
And did it?
Now, Mr. Harris, you're anticipating again.
I'm sorry.
Well, so it was. But around 6 o'clock that evening, I found myself at the Oxford Street end of Park Lane, a heterogeneous collection of loafers on the pavement, all staring up at a particular window, directed me to the house I had come to see. Good evening, Constable.
Good evening, Dr. Watson, sir. I was told you might be dropping around for a look at the scene of crime.
Yes, nice little crowd you've collected here.
Yes, sir. Nothing like a good murder to bring them out of their house. And look at that old codger up there with the white whiskers. Pushing his way up to the front. But he ain't been out of doors for months. Looks fair dusty, he does.
Oh, you mean the bibliophile?
The what, sir?
Book lover. Notice the titles of the volumes under his arm. Say, let's have a look. Origin of Tree Worship. Sign Language of the Druids, Life in Early Crete. Evidently collects obscure volumes, either as a trade or a hobby.
Well, well, I never would have noticed. I'll hand it to you, Dr. Watson. You're almost as good with your deductions as Mr. Sherlock Holmes himself.
Elementary, my dear constable, elementary. Poor old fellow. He's got a bad cough. Lung condition, probably. Well, there doesn't seem to be anything much to discover. No possible way of scaling the front of the building from below. How about the roof? Could he have come across from another building?
No, sir. Inspector Lestrade looked into that first thing. Roof's all divided off with iron bars. Spikes on them. About as easy to break into as the Bank of England.
Well, may as well be getting on home. Yes, I dare say even Holmes couldn't solve this.
Here's look where you're going, you clumsy fool.
Oh, I say, I'm terribly sorry. I hope you're not hurt.
Who cares about me? It's my books that matter. Struck them right out of my hand. There they are, lying all over the road. Mud on their covers.
Oh, please, let me pick them up.
No, you don't. And don't you touch them. You've done enough damage already. Mercy on us. Such a mess. Nobody appreciates good books nowadays.
Well, at least let me apologize. I'm
oh,
really
go
not
away,
sorry.
Dunner. Don't bother me. Can't you see I'm busy? Go home, can't you? You're new use standing around here.
Well, maybe he's right. Good night, Constable.
Good night, Doctor.
Lestrade knows where to find me in case he wants me. Any calls while I was out, Rosie?
No, sir.
Oh, good. Maybe my luck is in tonight. It was about time I had a peaceful evening at home. Oh, I spoke too soon. See what it is this time, Rosie. Croup or measles.
Yes, sir, right away.
No more privacy than a Siamese twin. Doctor can't call his soul his own. And as forever get... Oh, yes, Rosie, who is it and what does he think he has?
It ain't a patient, sir.
No? What then?
I don't rightly know, sir. He's an old fellow with white whiskers, like a billy goat. Said to tell you it was your bibliophile calling.
My what? Who, the bibliophile?
You're surprised to see me so soon, eh?
Well, how do you do? Come in.
Thank you.
That's all, Rosie.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, please sit down. I hope you're recovered from the bump I gave you.
Well, that's what I came to see you about, Dr. Watson.
Oh, yes?
I've got a conscience, sir, and when I chanced to see you come into this house, I came hobbling after you, because I said to myself, I'll just step in and see that kind gentleman and tell him I'm sorry I was a bit gruff a while back, and no harm meant. And I'm much obliged for offering to pick up my books.
Oh, not at all.
Maybe you collect books yourself.
Well, no, I can't say that I do.
Never too late to learn. Now, here's a copy of British Birds, and Here's a very fine catullus.
Yes, but...
Or perhaps this holy war would be more in your line.
Well, really, you know, I don't think...
A bargain, every one of them. With 5 volumes, you could just fill that gap on the second shelf.
So untidy, my dear Watson, quite unlike your old self.
Oh, Holmes!
Obviously. I wondered how long it would take you to penetrate my disguise.
Listen, you're not dead.
Your reasoning, my dear Watson, as usual, is faultless.
Well, I'm... For heaven's sake, I...
Easy, Watson, easy.
My dear Holmes, I think I sit down.
It's a very good idea. I'd better have a nip of this brandy.
Yes, I could do with a bracer.
My dear Watson, 1,000 apologies. I had no idea you'd be so affected.
Well, I'm not made of chilled steel like you, Holmes. Where's my brandy?
Here you are.
That's better. So it's really you standing here in my study. Well, thank heaven, why, you old reprobate, you. How in heaven's name did you ever come back alive out of that dreadful chasm where Professor Moriarty met his death?
It's quite simple. I was never there.
Yes, but good heavens, Holmes, it's been 3 years. You let us believe you were dead all that time. Now, was that nice, I ask
not,
you?
Not nice, Watson, but necessary. You see, Moriarty's gang was still to be dealt with. I was much safer if they believed I'd met my death at the same time as their illustrious leader. For 3 years, I've been living in disguise, tracking the members of that foul brotherhood to the ends of the earth. And now I'm happy to say there's only one left to be dealt with.
But look here, Holmes, why didn't you let me know who you were when I bumped into you in Park Lane just now?
Because, my dear Watson, you were being watched by the man I'm after, the last of Moriarty's gang.
Good heavens, who is he?
Someone you doubtless know, Watson. You may have even played whist with him on numerous occasions and lost. Most people lose when they play with the tiger, as Moriarty used to call him. A clever man, Watson. Very clever. He not only suspects that I'm alive, he even guesses I've returned to London.
Good Lord.
Yes, but I mean to take advantage of this cleverness. I've set a trap for him. I expect to catch my tiger tonight.
Tonight?
Exactly. I don't suppose you'd care to come along.
You just try to prevent me, that's all I have to say. Just wait till I get my hat and stick.
I think you'll find your old army revolver a little more appropriate, Watson.
And now, while Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson start tracking one of London's master criminals, suppose we tell you how to track down one of the most satisfactory bargains in the clothing business. Clippercraft concentrates on delivering exactly what you want in your clothes at remarkably low prices for such fine quality. You want long wear? Well, examine the rich, staunchly woven Clippercraft fabrics. You want comfort? You get it in Clippercraft through the most skillful designing experience can bring you. And you want the smartness your friends will admire? Clippercraft brings you all three. Smart styling, long wear, solid comfort, at unbelievably modest prices. It's the result of the unique Clippercraft plan, concentrating the buying power of 1,036 of the nation's finest stores from coast to coast, and bringing you amazingly fine suits at only $40 and $45, top coats in fine coverts and worsted gabardine for only $40 and $45, sport jackets for only $26.50, and smart tropicals at only $33.75 to $40. Yes, selling expensive clothes at inexpensive low prices at the nation's finest stores is the great big idea behind the Clippercraft plan. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits, top coats, and sport jackets and tropicals. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
But now back to Holmes and Watson. We find them slinking down a dark and sinister little alleyway.
I say, Holmes, Do we have to do all this pussyfooting down dark mews and through smelly stables?
Absolutely, my dear Watson. It's essential that we should not be followed at this stage of the game. Yes, we've passed Manchester Street and Blandford Street. Here, down this narrow passage.
Good Lord. It's as dark as the black hole of Calcutta.
Here, scale this fence.
Scale the fence?
Now, don't tell me you've let yourself get out of condition during my absence.
Certainly not, only, do you think it's quite dignified?
Probably not, but who'll ever know? Up with you.
All right. A little better. I've ruined the knees of my trousers.
Oh, stop burbling, Watson, and come along. We've got to get into this house.
Yes, but look here. It's an empty house.
Quite. That's why I selected it. Now, where did I put that key?
Don't tell me you're not going to pick the lock. Holmes, you're losing your grip.
Quiet. Come in. Easy does it. Shut the door after you. Gently, my dear Watson. Gently.
Well, I'm doing my best. It was a draft. Well, now what?
Come along upstairs. We should get a good view from the windows of the upper front room.
You know, Holmes, there's something spooky about an empty house. Strange noises, boards squeaking.
Easy. We turn a corner here. Are you with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Ah, this is the room. Excellent. The light from the street lamps, all the illumination we shall need.
Look here, Holmes. There's something familiar about this street out there. Why, of course, it's Baker Street.
Exactly. We're in Camden House, which stands opposite our old quarters.
Jove, no wonder it looked familiar. But why station ourselves here?
Because it commands an excellent view of our historic dwelling. Might I trouble you, my dear Watson, to draw a little nearer to the window, taking every precaution not to show yourself.
Right.
And then look up at our old rooms. We'll see if 3 years of absence have entirely taken away my power to surprise you.
Well, the windows of our sitting room are lighted. I see there's a man sitting in front of one. Well, look here, it's you, Ed. Well, that is, at least it's your silhouette.
It's a bust of me, to be exact. Anything else of interest in Baker Street?
There's two disreputable-looking fellows leaning against a lamppost.
Excellent, Watson. I expected them.
Holmes, good heavens, your head. I mean the dummy. It moved.
Of course, our old friend Mrs. Hudson has orders to move it from below from time to time. Listen, what was that?
Sounded like a door closing.
Yes. I felt a draft. By all that's holy, he's going to operate from inside this building. I expected he'd work from the street as he did before. Quick, Watson, we've got to get out of here. He'll probably want this window.
You mean whoever we're after, he's coming in here?
Of course. Quick, Watson, enter the next room. Here. Stand in the shadow where we can watch him without being seen.
I hear footsteps. He's coming.
Quiet, if you value your life.
Standing in the doorway. His face is in the shadow of his hat. Great Scott, his eyes blaze in the dark like a cat's.
Like a tiger's, Watson.
He's crossing to the window. He's raising the window.
Not very far, Watson. That won't be necessary.
His stick. His walking stick. Why is he pointing it out of the window?
It's a gun, Watson. Devilish invention. Doesn't make a sound. He's going to take a shot at my silhouette. When we hear the window across the street crash, we know he's fired.
He's aiming.
Get him, Watson, get him!
Hey, here! I've got him! Don't
move, you want!
The gun, Watson! Put your head here! Well, not before I squeeze the life out of you!
Holmes!
Oh, no, you don't!
Watson. Watson, are you all right? I knocked him out.
Absolutely. What's that for?
Those two men from Scotland Yard down in the street leaning against the lamppost. I must say, I thought our friend here would do his dirty work outside so they could deal with him firsthand. Ah, here come the regulars. Well, well, if it isn't Lestrade.
You bet it is. I took the job myself. And maybe we weren't glad to get your message at Scotland Yard half an hour ago. Although I must say we've done pretty well down there in your absence.
Really?
Solved the Ronald Adair mystery yet?
Oh, well, that is...
Our sleeping beauty seems to be coming too. Gentlemen, allow me to present Colonel Sebastian Moran, late of Her Majesty's Indian Army. I believe I'm correct, Colonel, in saying that your bag of tigers still remains unrivaled.
You go to blazes.
Yes, a remarkable shot. You and your air gun were invaluable to the late Professor Moriarty, eh?
I might have known that wasn't you in the window.
Quite. I'm surprised that such a simple stratagem could deceive so old a shikar.
What do you mean by that?
How often, Colonel, have you tethered a goat to a tree, lain above it with your rifle, and waited for the bait to attract your tiger? This empty house is my tree. You are my tiger. The only difference being that I did not care to be the goat myself. Take him away, Lestrade.
Just a moment. You can't arrest me for taking a shot at a dummy, not even if it's the dummy of Sherlock Holmes.
That's quite right. I arrest you for the murder of the Honorable Ronald Adair, because you are the only man alive capable of shooting a man through the slightly opened window from the street below without being heard. A truly remarkable shot, Colonel. A bit too remarkable. That's how I knew you were the murderer.
Now come along, you. Frank, bring that stick along.
Right, sir.
We'll need it as evidence.
Well, Watson, what do you say? Shall we step across the street to our old quarters?
Righto.
I think you'll find everything just as it used to be, and I'm sure Mrs. Hudson is anxiously awaiting us with sandwiches and a steaming pot of coffee. You see, I remember your weakness.
My weakness? Oh, I like that. And that, Mr. Harris, is the story of how I went to live in Baker Street again and started another series of incredible and amazing adventures, which I shall tell you about, if it won't bore you.
Well, what do you think, Dr. Watson? You know, there's just one thing I don't understand about tonight's story, though. Why did Colonel Moran kill Ronald Adair?
Because Adair had discovered Moran was cheating at cards and threatened to expose him. You remember that I said Adair had won £400 at whist the week before with Moran as his partner?
Yes.
That amount made Adair suspicious. He discovered the cards were marked. The very cards, by the way, which were found beside the dead body. He was examining them again to be sure he'd made no mistake. That's why the door was locked on the inside. He didn't want anyone to interrupt him.
I see. Well, what about next week's story, Dr. Watson?
Let me think. Next week, suppose I tell you about a rather curious dinner that Holmes and I attended in order to see if we could discover if a world-famous violinist was trying to poison his wife.
Did you succeed?
In a way, yes. Of course, there was a death, but I'll tell you all about it next week.
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and 1036 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next Sunday to Sherlock Holmes in The Case of the Very Best Butter. This is Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Following station identification, you'll hear Melvin Elliott with a 15-minute summary of the latest news.
In the name of the law, we bring you another of the thrilling stories in this exciting series, taken from actual police case files.
Our story begins on the night of August 5th, 1935, outside of Los Angeles, California, in the peaceful little community of La Cañada. The summer night is scented with the haunting fragrance of orange blossoms, whose drifting petals somehow seem like falling tears. And that strange sound that seems to float on the air, like the echo of some weird rattle. What is that? We shall see.
Well, here we are. The honeymoon cottage.
Looked like a swell little bungalow, Bob.
Not bad for a barber, huh, Harry? What do you say, Mildred?
Just marvelous, Bob. But it's all dark.
Not a light showing. Say, Bob, maybe Mary's asleep.
Just too bad if she is. We'll wake her up.
Oh, Bob, don't do that. Don't you think Harry and I could come and visit some other time?
Nothing doing. Mildred, I asked you and Harry to come over tonight because, well, Mary hasn't been feeling well lately, and I thought you could cheer her up.
We'll try. I'm so sorry.
Yes, Mary looked grand when I last saw her.
Always does. She's so beautiful with that lovely blonde hair and perfect white skin.
Yeah. Having a 27th birthday party soon. You'll have to come out. Here, up the driveway. Come on. Come right in. I'll turn on the light.
My father. Oh, how lovely.
So this is where you keep your bride.
Not bad for a barber, huh? Beautiful home, beautiful wife. Yeah, I'll call her. Mary. Oh, Mary. We got company. Yeah.
Bunny.
Mary. Are you down here? Bunny?
Maybe she's upstairs.
I'll run up and see. Mary. Brother Jackson having off all here. Harry!
Harry, I hope nothing's the matter.
Oh, don't be silly. What could be the matter?
Harry!
This house seems so empty.
Oh, Mary's probably out in the backyard feeding those rabbits of hers Bob was telling us about.
Mary! She's not up there.
Well, maybe she's visiting neighbors.
Neighbors? Not a chance. She doesn't know any of them. Hey, where are those flashlights?
Flashlight?
Here, Harry. You take this flashlight and I'll take this one. We'll search outside the house.
Sir?
Yeah. Bob, do you really think...
Please, let's hurry. Mary hasn't been well lately. I'm afraid she may have had a dizzy spell and fallen down somewhere.
I'm glad now we decided to stay.
Yeah. Harry, you take that flashlight and look out in the front yard. I'll look around outside.
Well, all right. Come on, Mildred. Outside, quick.
Here.
Now, I'll hold the flashlight. You see anything?
No. Oh, only those orange blossoms.
Anything but those flower beds?
No.
Oh, Harry! Anything
out
of the front yard?
No, Bob, nothing here.
I'm looking around the rabbit pen. Oh, Harry?
Yes?
Take a look in the side yard, will you?
All right. Come on, Mildred. It sure is dark out here. Certainly needed this flashlight. What's this?
It's a little fish pond with a fountain. A lily pond. Oh, look, it has water lilies in it. They're night blooming.
In full bloom, too. See how they're...
Harry. What's that? There. There, on the other side of the pool. Hold your flashlight. Oh, it's Mary!
Merciful heaven!
Bob! Hello!
Mary! Oh, Mary! Oh, look! Look at her hair around that water lily. Oh,
Lord. Mary, how did this happen? Oh, my poor little girl.
Steady, Mom. Steady.
Mary.
I think I'd better call the police.
What do you think happened, James?
I don't know, Sheriff.
He's not himself yet, Sheriff. Maybe I can help you.
Do you know what happened?
Well, not exactly, Sheriff, but Bob here told us that Mary, his wife, was subject to dizzy spells. Well, I figure she fainted and fell into the pond and then...
Yes, I see. We're going out again to look things over. You two stay here with James.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Jonesy.
Right.
Oh,
looks like pretty shallow water for anyone to drown in.
Yeah, sure does. About 8 inches deep, I figure.
Too bad. Hey, what's this? Turn that flashlight down on her legs. Look at that.
Well, her leg is swollen nearly twice the size of the other one. Was she in an accident or something?
I don't know. Here comes the doctor. We'll ask him what he thinks. Oh, Doc. Doc, here, this way, please.
Oh, hello, Sheriff. Is this the patient?
Too late for being a patient, I guess, Doc. Looks like a drowning.
Rather unusual in a shallow pool like this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Say, Doc, look at that left leg. What do you make of it?
Looks like a bite of some sort.
Do you know what kind?
Well, that's hard to say. It might be some insect like a black widow spider. But I can't say for sure without a chemical analysis.
You take charge of the body until the coroner comes, will you, Doctor?
Yes, I will.
Come on, Jonesy. Let's go inside again.
Right. Feel any better, James? Still too upset, eh? Maybe you can help us, North.
What do you want to know?
Has Mrs. James been in an accident recently?
Well, I really don't know. I didn't hear about any accident.
Hey, what's this? Mind if I read this letter? Look at this, Jonesy. Here's your answer.
Dear sis, just a line to let you know I'm pretty sick. My leg is all swollen. Something bit me while watering in the garden. And having lots of bad luck. This is all Blue Monday, but my daddy will be home early tonight, and he takes good care of me. Mary. Bitten by something in the garden, eh? So that's it.
Yep.
Well, you don't need us here now, do you, man? Suppose I take James home with me tonight. He's pretty well shot, and I think a good night's sleep somewhere else would do him good.
That'll be okay, I guess.
Well, come on, Bob and Mildred. We're going now. There, you sit in the back of the car, Bob, and you'll be more comfortable there.
Feel any better, Bob?
No. You know something, Harry?
What?
Too bad Mary had to die that way.
What do you mean?
Well, it's going to look bad for me.
For you? What are you driving at?
My third wife drowned in the bathtub in Colorado about 3 years ago.
Well, what in the world has that got to do with this?
Well, the cops will ask a lot of questions.
And that's what's worrying you now? You sure are a queer, Doc. You afraid of being questioned. And your wife stone dead. Gee.
You don't understand, Harry.
Well, I guess I don't. Proceed, Joey.
Yes, sir. Here's how we found the body, Inspector. Face down in the pool, head and shoulders submerged, wore thin flowered silk dress, blue boudoir silk slippers, skirt pulled up over knees, and legs bare.
Oh, Mary loved to watch the goldfish play in the pond.
There, Bob. Come on now. Calm down.
She must have fainted and fallen in the pond.
Mr. James, the law of Los Angeles County has no wish to meddle with a husband's grief. We simply want the facts.
Yes, sir.
Sheriff Joey. Are all your witnesses present?
Yes, Inspector.
All right. Go ahead, Sheriff.
We found this note, Inspector, on the table in the kitchen of the deceased home.
Let me have it. Mr. James, is this your wife's handwriting?
Yes.
This letter is addressed to Mrs. R. H. Stewart, Las Vegas, Nevada. Do you know her?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Stewart is her sister.
Something bit her while watering in the garden. That would account for the swollen leg. Today is old Blue Monday. My daddy will be home early tonight. Mr. James, you were at the barber shop all day yesterday?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been married to the deceased?
3 months. And say, Inspector, I've been married 5 times altogether. Quite a record for a man only 39, huh?
Mr. James, we're not interested at this time in how many wives you've had. We're investigating the circumstances of this death.
Sure, I thought I'd tell you about the other marriages so you wouldn't think I was holding out on you.
I see.
I'll say this. Mary was the best of the lot. She was a fine girl.
Mr. James, did your wife carry any insurance?
Yes. In a way, I'm sorry she did. That kind of puts me on the spot. You see, I'm the beneficiary.
We're not accusing you of anything. Now, how much insurance did your wife carry?
She had $2,000 policies that carried double indemnity clauses in case of accidental death.
Insurance, all right. Oh, Dr. Long.
Yes, Inspector.
Dr. Long? Are you the James family physician?
I was called in to treat Mrs. James about 7 weeks ago.
Go on, Doctor.
Mrs. James was an expectant mother.
Was Mrs. James subject to fainting spells?
She was quite nervous. I prescribed a mild sedative.
Would you say that in view of the state of her health, she might have fainted and fallen into the pool?
Well, yes, it could have happened. Poor woman.
Mary!
Oh, don't cry, Bob. Please don't cry.
Mary James was laid to rest in Los Angeles near the third wife of Robert James. The two brides of the strange barber lay side by side in eternal sleep. But the tragic story of Mary was not yet to have its final heart-rending chapter written. For while Robert James once more plied his shears in his barbershop in the office of Buren Fitz, district attorney of Los Angeles County, the shears of fate were also snipping.
Tui, let's hear that coroner's report again.
Yes, Mr. Fitz. Coroner's surgeon's report, Mrs. Mary Bush James came to her death on the night of August the 5th, 1935, as a result of drowning, with acute cellulitis of left foot and left leg following laceration of great left toe as contributing factor. Verdict, accidental drowning, case automatically closed.
All right, Tui. Well, what else have you to suggest, Inspector Southard?
Mr. Fitz, there's about only one thing left to do.
What's that?
I've been doing some scouting around. This fellow James is taking a house out on LaSalle Avenue.
Oh, who's his next-door neighbor?
The house next door is vacant. Now, my idea would be to install a microphone in his house, rent the house next door, and listen in for a while.
That's a good idea. Oh, Sergeant, get me Chief Police Davis on the phone. I want the best sound man in the department.
That way. Microphone working now?
Yes, sir. One in the bedroom and one in the living room.
Okay, here comes a voice test I don't expect. Turn it on.
From
David
shop, customers give me a pain.
Ever since your wife died, you've been complaining day and night.
If you don't like what I say, you know what you can do.
Only wish I could.
Hey, what's the idea? Why don't you send me
church for the woman? Please be quiet, Bob. I'm not the servant. If you want
your
church,
why don't
you take care of me yourself?
Shut up. Don't ever yell at me that way.
You're liable to a fall, Bob. Don't forget it.
It was good enough for you when you didn't know where your next meal was coming from, wasn't it?
I'll take you back, sonny, for everything you ever done for me.
What does she mean?
Quiet. Don't let him
that way.
Don't go away.
Keep quiet. You want to wake up the whole neighborhood?
Please, don't. Please.
I'm going over there and break that guy's head down.
Stop whining. I didn't hurt you. Between you and Hope Hogan.
Please, bother me while you're taking out on me.
Bother me, huh? Oh,
won't
be bothering me for long. Next time he tries to get more dough
for
me, I'll get him. Only better
than
I got married.
Did you hear that?
I knew it, talk.
I thought Hope bring you to the
barbershop,
sir. You did? Now,
why didn't he come in to see me? I only wish he had. Am I
going to
fix him? I
should
have done it long ago.
I want to know one thing. Isn't that girl a manicurist in James' barbershop? You're right, Captain. I thought I heard her voice sound familiar.
She testified for him at the coroner's inquest, remember?
Yes. But where does this guy Hope fit in the picture? He has something on James.
He owns a green Buick. That's all we know, but that's plenty. Come on, let's go.
Right.
A manhunt without parallel in the police history of Los Angeles was on. Armed with a complete list of all cars registered in the name of Hope, the law, grim and quiet, checked them one by one. On the morning of May 2nd, Inspector Southard and Tui, acting on a tip, drove up to a lunchroom in Hermosa Beach, where Charlie Hope was employed, and placed him under arrest for the murder of Mary James. While he was being grilled at headquarters, the two officers resumed their vigil at the recording instruments in the house next door to the one occupied by Bob James.
James is later than usual tonight.
I wonder if he knows that Hope was picked up today.
No, the DA's office has him undercover.
But Hope didn't crack yet, Captain.
Don't worry, Tui. With Williams grilling him, it won't be long now.
We take James tonight, eh?
You heard the chief's orders. We've got to get him red-handed. Listen. Here they come now.
Glad tomorrow's Sunday. I'm tired.
Me too.
How's your hurry? Would you like me anymore?
How could I?
Yeah, why shouldn't you?
Yeah,
come on.
No, please, please.
Yeah, what's the matter with you anyway?
No! No!
Come back or I'll...
Hey, Dewey! She's run away from him.
She should have done that a long time ago.
Open that door, I'll break it down, you hear me? Open that door!
Turn off that speaker. Let's pull our raid.
Okay. Are you sure you have the pass key?
Yeah, here it is. Let's go over. This way. Come in. I'll open the door. You walk in fast. Careful. James will have a gun.
Hey, what's the idea?
James, we're from headquarters. You're under arrest.
What for?
You'll find out.
You can't get me out of here. I ain't done nothing.
We can, Hank. But how about this?
Put it to him. He'll come all right. You too, sister.
Oh, why did I ever get in this mess? I knew something like this would happen.
Proceed, Mr. Williams.
Charles H. Hope, take the witness chair against me.
Charles Hope, I hand you this signed paper. Can you identify it?
Yes, sir, I can.
Tell the court what it is.
My confession.
You admit you wrote it?
Yes, sir, I do.
And you signed it?
I did.
Of your own free will?
Yes, sir.
You weren't forced to sign it?
No, sir.
Will you please read it to the jury?
Aye. Charles H. Hope, for the purpose of...
Just a minute. You may start with the next paragraph, please.
Yes, sir. About a year ago, I was broke. Went to Robert James' barber shop in Los Angeles to see if I could get a free haircut and shave. Oh, now listen, Bob, give me a free ride in the barber chair. Maybe I can help you someday.
Nobody helps Bob James. Say... Maybe you're the man I'm looking for. I'd like to make $100?
Boy, I'd jump at that chance.
Uh-huh.
How do I earn this $100?
Yes, huh? A friend of mine says he'll pay $100 for some good live rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes?
Yeah, rattlesnakes. Not afraid of mine.
For that money, I ain't afraid of nothing.
Huh? Here's the money. Get me two of the kind of snakes I want and keep the rest of the dough. Come on, we'll take my car. Come on.
You snake, Jim?
Yeah, snake, Joe. That's me.
Got any good diamondback rattlesnakes?
Water, I got the meanest diamond decks around here.
And look here, mister. Have they got a lot of venom in them?
Venom? See, that's what snake Joe's known for. They're what you call hot snakes, full of venom. You hear them rattling down in the pit?
Yeah, I hear them. How about them two big rattlesnakes over there in the corner of the pit? How much would they be?
I'll sell them rattles to you for 70 cents a pound.
Oh, you sell them by the pound, eh?
I'm sure that's the only way to sell rattlesnakes.
Okay. I'll take them two big ones.
Yeah? Well, there's my stick and the noose here. Oh, here they are. Come on, Lightning. Come on there, Forktongue. Yeah, I tell you, brother, them two diamond becks is the meanest killers in the state of California.
And they're wicked. Yeah, I brought this box with a glass top. Put them in here. Say, Forktongue's meaner than Lightning.
Yeah, they're plenty hot. Now, let's see. Take off the weight of the box. That's 10.5 pounds of rattlesnake. That's $7.35. Change out of 10. Well, here you are. I'll come again sometime.
Okay. I got the snakes, Bum.
Fine. You sit back there with them. Are they hot ones?
And half. Diamondbacks and plenty hot.
Chuck? There's no third party in this. I want to collect some insurance. You're the only one in it with me.
I don't get you.
Huh? You'll soon find out. My wife, she's the one.
I don't want to be mixed up in this kind of business.
You'd like to get some real dough, wouldn't you?
Use it.
I thought so. Well, here we are. Let's get out.
Did you bring in that box of snakes?
Yeah, over there behind the door.
Daddy, is that you?
Yeah, Mary, I'll be in soon. Shh, too thick.
Boy, I can't figure you out.
You're too dumb. Come on, let's have a drink.
Hey, where are you going with that rope?
Wait a minute, you'll see.
I'll come adhesive tape. Hey, what are you doing with that?
Shut up. It's going to be done right. You'll see.
Bob?
Oh, I'm so glad you're home. I don't feel well, dear. Please call the doctor.
You won't need a doctor when I'm through with
her. Bob, what do you mean? Please, Bob, don't you understand? I don't feel very well.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Mary. Come here. Come on.
What do you want, Bob?
Here. Take this pen and write what I tell you.
Well, what do you want me to write? Bob, dear, what's come over you? You look so strange.
Never mind. Just write. Like this. Dear sis, just a line to let you know I'm pretty sick.
Pretty sick?
Yeah. My leg is all swollen.
But Bob, what do you mean? My leg isn't swollen.
I said right. My leg is all swollen. Something? Yeah. I'm having lots of bad luck. This is old Blue Monday, but my daddy will be home early tonight, and he takes good care of me. Sign it, Mary. Now, put your darling sister's name and address on this envelope.
All right. Bob, why did you make me write this to Sis?
Turn around and don't talk so much.
What are you doing with that adhesive tape, Bob? Bob, I'm frightened.
Shut up.
Bob, what are you trying to do to me?
Come on.
My nose.
She will arrive, too.
Yeah. Hand me that rope. Give it to me. I'm going to tie the kitchen table. Hurry up.
And she can't see.
Shut up. Where was that?
There they are. But...
Get him. Get him. What are you standing around looking like that for?
All right. All right. I'll get him.
Put him down. Put the box down. Here, by her foot. Take the lid off the box. Take it off, I tell you. Take it off.
She's barefooted. Oh, don't put her foot in there. Don't. The snake girl. Put it on the side of the snake. Ah, open up.
I'll
turn
up some more.
She's fainted.
Now, they can take the snakes back and give them to Snake Joe. Ha, 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 ha.
I couldn't stand it in there. Is she dead yet?
Is she dead yet? She's been dead since 4 o'clock. To make double sure, I drowned in the bathtub. She's finished now, all right. Come in and help me carry her out.
No, I can't.
Come
I can't
on.
Do that.
Come on. You take her feet. I'll carry her head. We'll put her in a lily pond. Come on.
And then, after that, he cleaned up the bathroom, and he drove me home.
That's a lie! You did it!
Robert S. James, jury having found you guilty of murder in the first degree, I hereby sentence you to be executed according to the law of the state of California at San Quentin Prison at the time prescribed. You are to be hanged by the neck until you are dead. Again, when truth and justice triumph in the name of the law.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. Visit RelicRadio.com to find past episodes of this podcast, more from the series you heard today, and everything else Relic Radio. Our Shoutcast stream is available there, and we have a donate button as well for those who would like to help support this and all the shows. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.